Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe. I've got Ziggy Rodriguez.
That's me.
As well as Venerable Tom Dorian.
Hello.
Still waiting on that miracle. It's gonna happen
soon. Yeah, well, okay. You're just wishing for my early death.
No, I don't want that to happen at all.
Okay.
I don't want that to happen at all.
Okay.
In fact, I want you to have those miracles, so maybe I'm one of the miracles.
Before I'm dead, yeah.
Yeah, then you could, like, heal me.
What are you praying for right now?
I don't know. Just to live forever.
Well, let me know. I'll work on it.
Eternal life. That's what I'm praying for. Thank you, Tom, my intercessor, Venerable Tom. Uh-huh. I prayed to Venerable Tom.
Yeah,
you know
I hear
what?
You.
Anyway, so we are going to. This is an interesting show today because we are going to talk a little bit about kind of what we talked about last show about God's permissive will and His divine or active will. And how that all works. I got a couple of good emails. I just want to give a little shout out to Deacon Don. Thank you for listening. Appreciate that. I'm glad you liked the show, and I hope you liked this one today because it's kind of like we're going to do a little bit of an offshoot, I guess. And to some degree, when we finished taping the show, we finished doing the show, our last show. We kept talking afterwards, and I wish we had like these tiers levels of giving or whatever people could, we could have Catholic Cafe Plus, and you could hear the conversation afterwards after we sign off and say, well, we're done. It's like, yeah, but what about this and what about that? And we started talking about
a lot of
about,
those podcasts out there monetize that kind of stuff.
Maybe, but you know, we don't monetize anything. We're like really poor. Mm-hmm. We have no money at the Catholic Cafe, mm-hmm. But. You know what? We have good customers and we have good coffee, so that's really all there is. But we kept talking after doing that show last week, and we talked a lot about like just the faith it takes to live, right? And Tom, you had talked about. Remind me what you talked about. You brought up some agrarian stuff. You were like,
Well, we're just talking about how easy it was for. I think it came from a homily from Father MacArthur. Shout out to Father MacArthur. About years ago, about how it's easy not to believe in God now. You know, especially for kids. Kids have everything. They got their beds, they got their meals, they got their phones, they got everything. Literally everything they want.
Yeah. Why do they need a savior?
Right.
They don't need God. What do they need to be saved from?
Who's God?
They have everything. Yeah.
Who's God? And so, for whatever reason, my brain went to just the agrarian world when we became an industrial age. All of a sudden, it became.
Do you have like a potato farm or anything?
You know what? I'd love to have a potato farm.
Tommy Dorian and his potato farm.
Yeah.
It had a bad run a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah.
Picturing myself with the hat right now, in the overalls.
I see you as a guy that would like raise raccoons. That's what I see.
No, that's not me.
But you were thinking about like the idea.
It's just
that
easier to see God in the agrarian world
because, and I remember us talking about that for like 20 minutes.
We did.
Because you stop and think about this is about faith, really.
Mm-hmm.
This is really about how to have faith, because when you're in in an industrial society, mm-hmm. you've got stuff and you know how stuff works and you built stuff that makes other stuff work, and it's a very systematic approach to it. And so it's like you've got these pipes and you've got these engines and you got these conduits and you got these things, switches you flip and whatever, and you put in raw stuff on one side and on the other side it, comes out
right.
pancakes, and it's like, wow, this is pretty incredible. And then, but you—that's when you brought up the agrarian things. Like, yeah, but if you're in an agrarian society, you're basically putting a seed in the ground, and you have—it's like a magic box, right?
Oh, exactly.
Now we know it's not magic because we don't like magic because magic's bad. But when that farmer puts a seed in the ground, it's like, well, is something gonna happen? And then he's figured out over centuries, yes, something will happen. However, you brought up the point again of like, yeah, but still there's this faith element, because what happens if there's an early frost?
Oh, yeah.
An early snow or whatever.
Flood.
Yeah, or a flood or a hurricane or some other natural disaster that just wipes the, a tornado or a whatever that wipes the farm clean,
Yeah.
And then you kind of pick up and start again, but there's a faith element and that more people, I think, would believe in God if we were essentially back to the basics
totally
of
agree.
Life.
Yep.
Now, it doesn't mean that if you're using any kind of technology, you can't believe in God.
Right.
I just
more
kind
difficult.
Of, exactly. I just think it's harder.
Right.
Well, I've heard some really interesting critiques of technology, including on the podcast we've mentioned a few times.
Did you hear them on technology?
Yes, ironically.
I thought that was interesting.
The New Polity podcast has some interesting critiques of technology. Mark Barnes, a thinker in that group, has some particularly interesting things to say. And, you know, something that actually that doesn't begin with him, it has been a theme. I think actually Pope Benedict even explored similar themes to this, that technology a lot of times is rooted in fear. You know, that we create things because we're trying to exert control on that which we don't currently have control, right? And I don't know if this originated with him or not, but Mark Barnes, I heard, reflect that you could say that the fig leaf in the Garden of Eden was the first technology, right? And that we've been continuing down that road since. Now, just to take a step back, I'm not taking like a Luddite position, you know,
Luddites.
I'm saying that like...
The Luddites are who?
They were against technology, right?
They followed like, Lud.
They followed Lud, right, but they were trying to destroy technology and say that technology was inherently
bad.
And
when were they?
You know, there were a few hundred years ago. I'm not sure the exact date, so I don't want to throw things off.
I wonder
off
if there's
here.
Like a town called Ludville. You know, you go there and it's like the Dark Ages.
There's
I
a
don't
town
know.
Out there called Leadville.
Leadville could be. That's Colorado. But
right. And like so, like full disclosure, like I have a tech firm, right? So I'm not like against tech, and we're using tech, like you just said. So we're not like against tech here. But I do think that like sort of the mindset that goes into creating tech is an important thing for us to kind of take a step back and pay attention to. Like that same podcast, the same guy, Mark Barnes, one of the points that he makes is similar to what you were saying earlier about our industrial society, where he says, like, everything's got a new set of inputs. If you have a problem in an industrial society, you can master it. You're just looking at it as another set of inputs for another industrial solution.
You make blueprints. Right.
Right.
You sit and... You put some money. You have to have resources.
Yes,
right.
And so it keeps getting more and more complicated. But at that point, it becomes less and less resilient, and less, as a whole, cognizable. Right. And so whereas with, and I think another thing that is important for us to think about is, you know, you had that image you were talking about before, like a farmer hundreds of years ago, not really understanding, but just knowing, if I put a seed in the ground, especially under these conditions, I'll get crops. And there's mystery to it. I mean, the fact of the matter is, there's mystery. God is mystery, right? We, because of science and technological advancements and our scientific instruments, have been able to move the needle where we have greater understanding of the world. But no matter how much we might have additional information about the physical world, God is still at the source of those smaller and smaller details, no matter how more and more small our details get or how big our details get.
I know people who, oddly, they're bowlers, but I know people that will say things like, I only believe in what I can measure.
Yeah.
So and if I say something, I know them pretty well enough to be able to say, so then, like, science is God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I don't believe in God. I believe only what I can measure, so the observable world and things like that. And I'm like, man, you wouldn't have done well as a farmer then.
Right.
You know, you'd have to know, like, you wouldn't be able to do anything unless you knew. Now, history will tell you things, like, if I put a potato in the ground, I'm going to make a potato plant.
Right.
Right? And you can witness that from the trees, et cetera. But, like, there is, you said the right word, mystery, right? There's this mystery that is repeatable, and so then you start to realize that's actually part of God's plan. It's a plan of somebody or something, and it's an ordered plan. This is how this works, right? And so that's how I always think, like when I'm teaching RCIA or OCIA, sorry, things have changed. And so when I'm teaching OCIA, when I'm at the part about creation, I will tell people, you actually don't need to have a theology book to discover God. You really just need to have eyes to see and hands to touch and like your five senses to look around you and see that there's order in the world. And when you do that, then you still realize there's mystery, but you believe, right? You have faith. You believe that if I put this seed here, or if the sun comes out and melts the snow, you start to think, if this happens, then that will happen. Mm-hmm. And in that order, you start to discover God's existence.
Right.
Where a lot of people struggle, and they don't see God in that. They just see, like, well, we just know that the sun comes up at a certain time. It's like, yeah, but there's a pattern there that had to exist before existence. Something had to start everything. And what I don't know is for an atheist, whether they just don't want to have that. It's just a conundrum. It's an acceptable conundrum. Or is that like, it's so impossible. It's so infinite, right, that I will never discover that. But Sam, you rightly were talking about people that measure things. They're still measuring things, right? And we build bigger telescopes and more powerful microscopes, and we get these more distant things that we discover, and we get these tiny, tiny, tiny things we discover. And each end of that spectrum that you go to, right, this whole spectrum tells you that we can keep making bigger telescopes, and we can keep making more powerful microscopes, and we're going to keep discovering smaller and smaller and smaller things until you get to, like, what scientists refer to as the God particle. Yeah. Even scientists call it the God particle because they're looking for that,
right?
Which I suspect they'll never find.
Right. No, I agree, and I think that, you know, in science, so there are some people within the atheist community who say that people like us, we believe in a God of the gaps, right? So we just use God to fill in the gaps, and so anything that science doesn't know, we just explain it by God. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, like, God is the source of all being. He's the source of all truth, and we are at different stages in our lives and in our, both individually and collectively, we're in a participation of his revelation of himself. We happen to live at a time where there's a lot more that's been revealed through rational inquiry about the nature of the universe, but it still points to, you know, a thing that we've talked about in previous episodes, the principle of sufficient reason, right? So the principle of sufficient reason is the basis that underlies science. If it exists, there must be a reason that it exists, right? Well, that basis for science also points to God.
Yeah, the initial cause or the initial mover.
Yes.
Or the initial reason, the initial, right? But that's where I just wonder. I wish we need to have an atheist on the show.
I know, right?
Like, well, a confirmed it, not one of the atheists that, like...
That would be a long show.
Maybe, but I just think that I want to ask those questions, like, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then then once they've told me what they believe, I'll say, so what you're saying to me is, like, I used the word believe on purpose. Like, what do you... So if you're listening, by the way, if you're listening and you are an atheist, I would love to hear what you believe. Because, again, my opinion, and maybe I'm ignorant, you know, and there are times when I have walked into a, you know, wall, right? I've done ignorant things in my life, and I realize that, and that's all part of learning. But, like, if I use the word believe, what that means is that's something you can't prove. It's like you think that way. Why mm-hmm. do you think that way? What do you believe? I believe essentially means there's faith, right? I have faith. The word believe means faith in my mind. Mm-hmm. Maybe to an atheist it doesn't. You know, maybe he says, well, I wouldn't use the word believe. I would say I have come to the conclusion based on this measurable evidence. And that's what I'd want to know is, like, is that true? And if that's true, like, what evidence do you have, and how far back does that evidence go, and how small does that evidence get, or how far, right, in with the microscopes and the telescopes? And I would love to have that conversation because it I don't know. For me, I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have a reason to exist.
Right.
Because to me, it's like, then I'd go, why isn't there total chaos? And then, like, Christopher Hitchens, I've listened to some of the arguments that he'll put forth about, like, morality would still exist, right? Because there's a need for, well, there's a need for human beings to live with each other, mm-hmm. together, and you can't unless there is a set of acceptable behaviors, mm-hmm. right? And this is the stuff where I keep going, I'm going back to what you're saying, Ziggy, because you're like saying, like, yeah, we see that, that's God.
Right.
That's the initial mover is God, the first mover, the initial cause, whatever, And the reason why we are in some kind of orderly fashion is because we desire order and we desire to live according to the moral good, because that's the nature of who we are and how we were created.
Well, I think something that makes Christianity radically different than a lot of the thought systems that we have in the world today, with all the isms that we live around, you know, there's liberalism, Marxism, communism, you know, feminism, any
Luddism.
But there's a broad variety of isms and ideologies. And if you think about it, if you take it, if you just choose any one ideology, they have they tend to be a comprehensive explanation for reality. Right? They try to take reality and try to reduce it to a set of definitions and a set of ideas and say, well, you can explain everything through this ism. Right? And we're used to that now.
That's called ismism.
Right?
It's just ismism.
and we feel in a way that science is going to get us to that ismism. You know what I mean? Right? And that's whereas with Christianity, people might assume, oh, you have a God of the gaps and bring to that assumptions about us.
He conveniently answers your questions.
Right, exactly.
But you concocted him.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But for us as Christians, what we tend to embrace is mystery. That underlying all of reality is mystery, and that we're never going to be able to reduce all of, like St. Thomas Aquinas said, you'll never be able to completely exhaust everything about a gnat. You know, like, and you're not going to be able to just reduce, you're always going to be able to plumb more deeply what went into God creating that gnat and how all the pieces fit together and how that relates to how all these other pieces in the universe fit together and why. That there's literally, you can spend eternity plumbing just that, right? And see, we as Christians are comfortable with that notion that there's mystery, and part of the reason that we're comfortable with it is, so I think that where faith comes in for us is to look upon that mystery, but not fear it. I think other people, the tendency in the world is to look upon that mystery and not look at it as mystery, but look at it as the unknown and look at it as the source of uncertainty.
Right. But see, what something's beautiful about that mystery is like, you know, connected to that is like our human desire. Like, we love mystery novels, mystery movies. And why? Why do we love them? We would hate them if there was this, and sometimes we do hate, like, the movies or the books when we find out that the last page is missing.
Yeah, the mystery novel,
right? Because if I remember correctly, in one of my theology classes that I had in formation, I remember one of the professors teaching us that that the word mystery comes from mysterion, which is, I believe it's mysterion, which is a Greek word that essentially means something that is hidden that will be revealed.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of the reasons why I think that we as Christians lean into mystery and we're okay with it is because what we do is we have faith that all will be revealed. Mm-hmm. It just won't be here and now.
Right.
So we live and we lean into that mystery and say, this is the greatest Christian mystery, is the Trinity or the Eucharist or whatever. And it's like, you know, we get the benefit of it, and we can see the offshoots of Trinitarian belief and realizing that, like, a family of love revealed love to us, and so it helps inform what we do in our families and the fact that we live in families, you know, and things like this, and then in the mystery of the Eucharist, we don't know how it works.
Yeah,
right. It's the greatest of gnats, as you to use your that we have no idea ultimately, because it's supernatural. It's beyond, outside of nature, and it's like, but we have faith that it does, and then we see the results, or the effects, I guess, better in our lives. And so then we lean into that mystery and go, like, I want more of that, please. Mm-hmm. I'll have that, please, sir, because that's really what informs and gives me meaning and purpose, so that we don't fully know it now, but we will know it later. And that's why I tell people, it's like, you don't want to believe, again, this is me talking to OCIA classes, you don't want to believe in a God that you can put into a box.
Right.
You don't want to define God, because if you define a God, then you've put him in a little box, and now you control him. right? That little box is something you hold on to. Whereas imagine now, instead, the opposite, which is you are in the box.
Right.
Right? And the box is God. And we just don't see outside the box. Now I'm getting into Albert Camus, you know, The Stranger and things like that, living in an egg. Sorry, that's philosophy class from way back when. And that just kind of just bubbled to the top. Don't know why, but it did. But the point is, and that, which is, by the way, the basis for that movie, The Matrix. You know, we're stuck in a matrix and like living in some kind of little egg. And we have no idea of our own existence until we get outside that. All those things, you know, this is why we started talking about this stuff, because it's just fascinating as human beings to be able to have these conversations. But at the very core of them is something goes back to what Tom had brought up. We were talking about with Monsignor MacArthur's talk about kids don't need God. It's why there's so many young atheists or agnostics in the world, because what do I need that stuff for? I don't need any of that. And so I don't know what brings faith in that way, other than maybe the lack of some of those things. If we ever have a electromagnetic pulse that shuts down all the cell networks all over the world, you know, what it would be like to go back to an agrarian society? What would it be like to lose some of the industry and whatever? What if AI becomes self-aware and we got like Terminator 5 or whatever number that would be? There's a lot of questions that are in the world, but at the end of the day, I'll just go back with God. I would just rather have a benevolent God that loves me.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head there with benevolent God that loves me, because, you know, we as Christians, we look upon the world in mystery. And we're also called to look upon ourselves even in mystery, because the Lord desires to move through us and through others, and he moves in mystery. But there's something that he has stepped out of that mystery to reveal to us, and that is his goodness, right? And this connects us back to last week's show, like trusting in the goodness of God's permissive will and allowing us to use that gift of reason, not just to explore how things work together physically, but to, through reason and through the gift of faith, come to see how things work together for our good with a capital G in salvation history. Whereas if you're an atheist, you know, and you know, the tendency then is generally to say that what you're going to get to is just at the core of all things is chaos, and that we have to scramble and we have to create good and we have to create meaning, but it's not going to really last, you know, and none of us are really going to create anything that's you know, truly going to last, and therefore you just end up with nihilism, right? And you end up with disorder, and so we believe as Christians that there is a goodness that exists beyond our understanding, and that relates back to what we were talking about too, in terms of God's permissive will, and like what you said last week, that it won't be until the last day that we'll see how all the dots of salvation history connect. And in the same way that we don't have all the answers for what's happening at the subatomic level or at the
celestial
cosmological level, we don't have all the answers for why this or that bad thing was permitted to happen in our life. But if we look upon the mystery of life and say, but I trust that there is a goodness that's there, and I trust that at the core of all reality is Christ crucified, you know, him revealing his heart to us through his self gift, and that's at the core of all that is true, that I can find my way to that truth, into the goodness, into the beauty of that truth and that goodness through my faith in God, and I don't have to sacrifice reason. And in fact, what reason, my reason grows to help me make sense of the world. I might not have all of the answers, but he's going to give me enough light to see my next step so I can continue to follow him and continue to grow in union with him.
Yeah, you know, and I do want to reiterate something, you know, that highlight something that you said a little bit also. It actually is good. It is good to find out why and how. So the fact that people claim all the time that the church is anti-science, right, that's the biggest falsehood ever. Most of the great scientific discoveries were either promulgated by the church, by churchmen, right? The Big Bang Theory and all the different things that are in, that scientific developments, the church is all about that. In fact, one of the corporal work is it corporal work of mercy instructing the ignorant, right? Yeah. And it's like we don't want ignorance. Ignorance is bad because if you're ignorant of how the world works, the more ignorant you'll be ignorant of each other, right? And you'll be ignorant of God, and that's not good. So it's not about just learning what the church allows you to learn. The church invites, you know, they got some big telescopes at the Vatican too, right? And so there's a lot of scientific study, because what we do is if we're gonna study nature, we're essentially studying seeking the author of nature, who is God. So we're okay with that. We're totally okay with that. But at the end of the day, what really matters is that we embrace that mystery, that we seek God and we seek the truth, and then we share that truth when we encounter it or as we encounter it. And then I think at the end of the day, that's how we find God, right? That's how we answer the questions and only the questions that we can answer, because there's always going to be questions we can't answer until the great day, the last day, the final day, you know, of our existence. Then we'll know everything. And I don't know if that's going to be like, wow, that's awesome, or like, oh, yeah, well, all right. Mm-hmm. I don't care because I've got God. Mm-hmm. I'm literally standing in front of him, the beatific vision, where all things, I'm satisfied in all possible ways. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, and that's a great gift, and it's something that I think all of us desire. But I think us Christians might have a leg up on the competition a little bit, and we need in a generous way to share that, to evangelize those who don't understand that basic truth. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at The Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.